On Monday, all 163 members of the Missouri House underwent training for sexual harassment. This followed a year in which the House Speaker and an independent state senator wound up resigning over allegations of sexual harassment involving interns. Today, we'll find out what lawmakers learned, what difference it will make, and just how serious Missouri lawmakers are about changing the culture in the state capitol. With us today, Robin Kuhlman. She's an assistant professor of political science at the University of Central Missouri, where she also serves as the intern coordinator. Robin, nice to have you here again. Welcome.
Nice to be here.
Joe Hatley is an attorney and partner at Spencer Fain, where, among other things, he helps educational institutions navigate the law. He also practices employment law. Joe, welcome to you.
Thank you, Steve.
And also with us on the phone from Jefferson City is Representative Kip Kendrick. He's a first-term Democrat representing Columbia. He spent 4 months last year with state colleges and universities discussing the issues surrounding interns at the State House. And Representative, good morning to you.
Yeah, thanks so much. Great to be here.
Well, Robin, you were closely involved with an intern last year who worked in the office of Senator Paul LaVota of Independence. He ended up resigning over allegations of sexual harassment of interns. Looking back on it now, how big a problem was there, and maybe there still is, at the State House when it came to the treatment of young women?
Well, I'll tell you one thing, that with my particular job, I've had only worked in it for about 3 years. And so, you know, as an observer, I basically observed the external outputs of the legislature itself.
Yeah.
And wasn't really aware initially as to the problems that they had concerning any sort of sexual harassment or any sort of bad behavior on part of the legislators.
But you found out.
I did. And as I unraveled, I was surprised. I was upset,
mm-hmm.
And then, of course, saddened, but also motivated to ensure that our students are safe.
Representative Kendrick, chime in here. How big a problem is there or was there in the State House?
Right. You know, it clearly we had a couple very serious violations this past year, but, you know, as we know, these behaviors were not new and they weren't unique. I was not naive to the problems that existed, but my work this summer on drafting intern policy changes, putting a substantial amount of time into it, talking with former interns, current interns, I truly got a better appreciation of how big of an issue it was and really how much attention should be brought to the issue to address it properly.
You know, Robin, there's all this talk now about cleaning up Jefferson City, cleaning up the culture there. How serious do you think the legislature is at the end of the day in terms of its commitment to clean up its collective act here?
I think they are very serious. From the beginning, the Senate initialized the process, worked on in tandem with the Title IX process that we had at the university.
Yeah.
They changed their in-house policy, and so did the House of the Missouri House. You see right now, actually, you had three ethics bills yesterday that were heard in committee and sent straight out to the floor.
Mm-hmm. So. Representative Kendrick, you also shared that view that there's a serious effort underway here?
No, yeah, I do. I believe there is a serious, and it goes much beyond just cleaning up intern policies. It involves limiting lobbyist gifts. It involves closing the door, creating a cooling off period from legislators becoming lobbyists. But front and center, you know, I'm all too concerned that campaign finance limits are going to be left out of discussion. That's an important issue that we need to deal with in the state as well.
Yeah. Do you think, Representative, that lawmakers, has the message been sent? Do they get it now?
Yes. Yeah, a lot of my colleagues, I want to be clear that the vast majority of my colleagues here in Jefferson City behave properly, especially an intern,
sure.
You know, as regards to sexual harassment or the power dynamics. But there are bad actors, definitely. And I believe the renewed focus on it over the summer and into the fall has put an immense spotlight on Jefferson City to clean up their act. And it's great. You know, this is a much-needed we've had a much-needed discussion, and I think that there's a lot of attention here in Jefferson City and a lot of people taking it very seriously.
Joe Hatley, you're our attorney on this panel here this morning. Tell us about the legal definition of sexual harassment. Bring us up to speed here. What is it exactly?
Well, basically, sexual harassment can take two forms. The first is called quid pro quo, where you tell someone, I will do something for you if you basically will engage in some sort of improper conduct with me.
Mm-hmm.
That one's not quite as pervasive or broad as much. The other kind is a hostile work environment, and that's essentially any kind of unwelcome sexual advance or physical or verbal harassment that is sexual in nature. And we don't prohibit necessarily offhand comments, but if it becomes severe and pervasive, then that is sexual harassment.
How tough is that to prove, a hostile work environment, Joe?
Easier than it used to be.
Oh, really?
If you look at what happened, for instance, in the Missouri House, there were text messages. A lot of times people are now leaving digital trails of their conduct or their contacts with people. If we go back 20 years, for instance, to Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill, it was just he said, she said. Now people are leaving those breadcrumbs. So a lot of times it is easier to prove now as opposed to simply having to decide who's telling the truth.
Which makes, it must be a relief for people like you who can maybe see through the darkness sometimes.
It is, because we can get to someone's computer, we can look at their cell phone, we can see if there's proof, and then give them good advice as to whether, in fact, it happened or it didn't, or how difficult the case is going to be to prove or disprove.
You know, Joe, Representative Kendrick just alluded to something called Title IX. That's a federal law. How does that play into the state capital in Jefferson City?
Essentially, Title IX prohibits sex discrimination at any educational institution, a college, K-12 school, that receives federal funding. And most colleges, seminaries, universities receive that because their students are going there on student loans, federal student loans. When you have an intern who's in a program that's sponsored by the school at the Capitol, and that intern is being harassed by the legislators, for instance, and that deprives that student of that opportunity, they feel it's so severe they need to leave, then you have a Title IX problem.
So Title IX affects even activity and behavior inside the Missouri State House.
It can, and mm-hmm. it has, because if the student feels like they can't do this because the harassment is so bad, then you're depriving the student of that opportunity, that educational opportunity. And that then requires the university to take some kind of action to try to address it.
Huh. And that was probably covered in the sexual harassment training yesterday. I know you weren't there, but that kind of idea probably was discussed then.
I would hope.
Yeah. Okay. Robin Kuhlman, again from the University of Central Missouri, of the different steps that the legislature has taken to clean up the culture there for this session, what are some of the most positive things in your view?
Well, I think the most positive thing that's come out of this is this the open discussion about some of the behavioral problems that they've had. I mean, you can have...
And an awareness you're talking about.
Exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. Because that essentially blew the top off the Capitol, mm-hmm. right? And they're under the microscope at this point. Now, I do agree that, and I know plenty of excellent representatives that have, you know, been highly supportive, have always been great, and obviously don't have any of these, you know, behavioral issues that that we've seen. Basically, the attention itself has become a positive.
Is your sense, again, I asked the representative this, that lawmakers, the rank and file lawmaker in Jeff City, there is a new awareness, would you guess?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. In fact, I've had some offices saying, hey, please send us your UCM interns. We have a safe environment.
Well, speaking of that, I'm wondering about the number of applicants to be in your intern program at the University of Central Missouri this year compared to previous years, this being the first year after all the controversy last year.
I have had less, but actually I think that may be due to the fact that the parameters of the House policy had yet to come out in terms of applying for a position as an intern in the House.
Mm-hmm.
I had to wait to announce and to advertise. So I don't necessarily think that the controversy itself had stopped students from applying, but it was the inertia in which the House actually came up with the policies.
Just go ahead, Representative.
Well, I was going to say that was one of my biggest frustrations over the entire summer. I was put on the work group for intern policy on May 20th, shortly after the end of session and after the controversy regarding the speaker erupted, former speaker. And there is no work group meetings ever the entire summer. I put together a substantial policy recommendations and submitted those to the work group on July 24th and called for a meeting at that point or requested a meeting and still nothing. Finally, after, renewed focus on this and a push from me and from several other members, we got movement on it in the House. And the policy, I want to be clear, the process was frustrating. The policies that have been adopted are substantial policy changes, so I do appreciate that. But it did create problems for intern programs around the state. And I'm an intern coordinator now this year as a result of my work, I suppose. But numbers have been cut in half, close to cut in half as number of interns we'll have in the Capitol. Now, over the next couple weeks, we expect for that number to go up some, but it will still see a substantial decrease from where we've been in the past.
Representative, same question I asked Robin. In your view, what are some of the most positive steps the legislature has taken to clean up the culture there?
Well, one of the most glaring gaps in existing policy or previous policy that we had was actually addressing the behaviors that maybe didn't rise to the level of sexual harassment. The scandal involving the former speaker may not have actually risen to that level of sexual harassment. It was a consensual, as far as we could tell, it was consensual behavior. But there is a clear power dynamic, a power differential between the legislator and the intern that policy never addressed. And so something that I put forward in my recommendations and that was ended up being adopted was non-fraternization policy, drawing a clear line of what is an acceptable relationship, what's not acceptable. Also, expanding the number of mandated reporters in the House and expanding training. The sexual harassment training that we went through yesterday was an in-person training. It was about 2 hours long,
right?
And it was substantial. I mean, it was a detailed conversation. It was an actual two-way conversation as well, much more important than having a click-through computer program that you answer 10 questions at the end of it. So I believe that there are substantial changes coming from the recommendations.
Again, Joe Hatley is our attorney here. We just talked about some of these new rules, Joe, that govern relationships inside the state capitol. Are those things enforceable? I mean, if you have two consenting adults, and I want to underline the word adult, because I think in some cases, some of these students are not officially adults yet, but I imagine most of them are. I mean, can those relationships be governed either by rule or law or anything else?
Well, they are consensual. That's the point the representative makes. But it could be appropriate, for instance, for the university to also say, we're not going to permit you to engage in these relationships because it really interferes with what you're trying to do, what you're there to learn about. And the university, I believe, could put a condition on a student's participation that would say, you cannot do this. If you want to have this relationship, you can't be an intern.
Can rules say in the Missouri House of Representatives, are those enforceable rules that would govern relationships between lawmakers and interns?
Well, they would be enforceable as to the legislators only to the extent that there's a corrective procedure in
mechanism
place in the
inside
House,
in the House. Yeah.
Because you have to go through the House disciplinary process.
Yeah.
That's really the only way that could be enforced.
Robin, what do you tell your interns as they head down to Jefferson City about what behavior you expect for them? What are the rules, even when it comes down to maybe dress code?
Yeah, I have codes of conduct, and I've always had codes of conduct. There are a variety of different things that we talk about prior to sending them off. I do have my own handbook, as does the House and as does the Senate. We discuss professionalism. I discuss dress code. Dress code is that they are in a professional environment. I've never actually gone to the Capitol, announced or unannounced, and seen them dress otherwise. We discuss.
Is that ever an issue? Just being blunt here, is the dress of the interns, has that ever been an issue as far as you're concerned?
No, not at all.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all.
Representative, go ahead.
I was going to say, if I can intervene there, the suggestion this summer by some representatives that it was a problem was absolutely misguided.
Mm-hmm.
It is not an issue. In fact, there's a dress code that has been in existence for interns for a number of years that basically mirrors that of the elected officials in Jefferson City. So that was not an issue. And for the suggestion, it was demeaning to interns and to the entire process.
So what do you do, Robin, if you hear some of your interns are out drinking with lawmakers in the evening? What's the response?
My response to that is, first of all, they are adults, and I can't curb their behavior outside of what they do at the Capitol if it's and that type of behavior. Well, it's not really behavior. That's just something that is part of the culture. Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. But prior to sending them out there, I do discuss drinking. I do discuss the fact that they're going to be out. They're going to be, engaging with outside of the Capitol in those types of environments. They'll be invited out to the bar. I tell them that, hey, you're being watched. Make sure that you keep
your professional. You're always being watched,
absolutely.
Right? Reporters are down there.
Oh,
people are watching.
Yeah. Absolutely. Watch what you say. Don't put yourself in a vulnerable position.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that you maintain your professional appearance outside of the Capitol.
Yeah. And Representative Kendrick, to what extent have those guidelines been followed in the years that you've been in the State House by the interns themselves? Professional behavior.
Well, there are a lot of professional interns in the Capitol. I've not had any concerns. I've just been down here for a year. I had an intern this past year and one this upcoming session as well. And, they're a blessing to have in the Capitol. It really, not only does it provide them a great educational experience, it also provides us a great tool for, for promoting a piece of legislation and doing research. So, I have no concern.
Joe Hatley, again, as you've been listening to this conversation, how serious do you think the legislature is when it comes to dealing with the issues at hand here?
I think they're starting to take it very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen careers get ended. People who apparently were on a very good career trajectory out of office, really affecting them simply because people are watching. I think now they finally get it. That's certainly the impression I'm getting.
Yeah. Representative, tell us a little more about the training yesterday and the reactions from your fellow lawmakers to that training. All 163 members of the House, I'm told, were, I guess, required to take part in this training. Where did it take place? And tell us about it.
Yeah, it took place down here in the hearing room. It was provided. The House of Representatives hired outside counsel to come in and put together a presentation on Missouri House of Representatives policy against harassment was the title of it. Gave us a fairly detailed handout of all the policy changes slides where we could take notes. And like I said before, it was a two-way conversation. There were very good questions being asked. And some of the questions obviously were a little guarded, because we were in a room with colleagues. So, but there was also some unguarded conversation as well happening, some real questions being asked and clear points of clarification. And as I said, it's much more positive than going through a sexual harassment training on a computer.
How useful was it, Kip, as you look back at it?
Yeah, no, it's the book's very helpful, and you just going through it and taking a look at it. I think it's important, and it's going to be a yearly event. It's a mandatory annual training, and I think that's important because you get new members in. We have three new members of the House of Representatives coming in midterm,
right?
And so it'll be important to do it annually. It may get a little bit old. I think by the seventh year of the same or similar training, some of us will be wondering what we're doing. But again, it's necessary.
We're talking this morning, if you're just joining us, about the sexual harassment training that members of the Missouri House went through yesterday and its ramifications. Representative Kendrick, I'm just wondering about, again, the change in culture here and how this training is going to impact lawmakers going forward. Can you just walk us through the procedure now that if an intern complains of sexual harassment, what happens? What's the step-by-step approach here?
Sure. It's a pretty detailed step-by-step,
okay.
But generally speaking, the complaint will be referred to Human Resources, will be referred to the Chief's Clerk's Office. It'll be a complaint will be sent to that member's, to the caucus chair as well, and then it'll be investigated. Right now, there's written in the proposal, the outside counsel will be hired to investigate any and all complaints of harassment. some sticking points on who that outside counsel may be. You know, I think one of the things that need to be clarified, we need to actually come up with a list of potential outside counsel. That way the chief clerk's office is not scrambling at the last minute to find somebody to hire. Also, we need to make sure there's a list so there's no internal conflicts on who's chosen to do the investigation. But that investigation will be kept confidential until it's complete, and then it will be reported back to the ethics committee.
But why is it kept confidential? Why is a reporter, can I not get a hold of that information if a lawmaker from my neck of the woods here in Kansas City has been accused of this?
Right. You know, I think it's important, especially during the investigation, to keep it under wraps, you know, protect the identity of the victim, but also to protect the identity of the accused as well, in case that the complaint is not found to be substantial. There could be a lot of political games that could be played.
Right.
And you know, that was one of my issues this summer, coming up with policy recommendations, was how do we keep politics out of it? And that's sometimes a very difficult thing to do in Jefferson City.
Yeah.
Now, there is...
Wait, hang on a second, Kip. Joe Hadley, you've conducted these investigations. This notion that they'll be kept confidential, is that the right way to go or not?
I think it is, for mm-hmm. the reasons the representative stated.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the victim doesn't necessarily want to be identified. The person who's been accused of it may be innocent. There could be other factors going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if people know that the fact the investigation's going on or who's involved if it becomes public, it can really compromise the integrity of the investigation.
How often are these investigations, Joe, pretty clear-cut as opposed to kind of a murky undertaking where you don't really quite know what the heck happened?
Well, like I said previously, it's easier now.
Because of the electronic trail.
The electronic trail that's left. Usually you can look at the emails, you can look at the text messages, and pretty much surmise whether something was going on or not. And it also sheds a lot of light into the motivations of the people involved. How consensual was it? How far was this power differential playing? How big of a role was the power differential playing in what was going on?
Mm-hmm.
So it's easier than it used to be.
Representative, if a lawmaker is in fact found guilty of harassment, at that point it becomes public?
Well, you know, I'm not quite for clear.
Okay.
Certain when it becomes public, it will be will go to the ethics committee for review, and you know that's part of the discussion as well, as when should it become public. And I assume at the point that the individual is found guilty, then there needs to be some type of ramification. And there's also been a pretty good discussion of whether the report should be released at the end of the recommendation, especially if an individual is found guilty. Needs to be a good debate about it.
So at the end of the day, then, it's lawmakers themselves who are passing judgment on any sort of punishment for one of their colleagues?
Well, so at the end, as this moves forward to ethics committee and some of the information becomes sunshinable, I would assume that, especially in the case where there is someone who's guilty of sexual harassment, then the information will get out. Will become public, and at that point, the pressure being placed on and the spotlight being placed on that individual will force someone out of office pretty quickly.
Joe, is that the right way to go? How would you handle the whole notion of how a lawmaker found guilty of harassment should be punished by the Missouri House or Senate, for that matter?
Well, I'm not very familiar with their internal rules, but
sure,
that's usually how that goes.
Okay.
The House Senate has the ability to determine whether its own members are suitable to remain in office.
But it's like the fox guarding the chicken coop, though.
It is, and that's where the media comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's exactly what happened.
Thank goodness
spring.
For the media, Joe. That's what we stand for,
that's
right? That's what we're here for.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, they really are important, because if you do have something that's going on that's not a good thing and you can't get the people to disclose it, that is where the media comes into play. They do serve a very important role.
Well, it sounds like it's a new day in Jefferson City, Robin Kuhlman. That would be your bottom line conclusion here?
Absolutely.
When it comes to interns and harassment and all these things?
I think we're moving forward in a positive direction, okay. And I look forward to seeing what kind of improvements are going to continue.
Well, I'm glad to hear of your view. I want to thank Robin Kuhlman, an assistant professor of political science at the University of Central Missouri. Joe Hatley is an attorney and partner at Spencer Fain. And State Representative Kip Kendrick joined us from the Capitol. He's from Columbia. And we appreciate your time, too, Representative. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much.